So you're very welcome back to The Art Show on 90.3 Near FM. As I mentioned earlier in the programme, we're absolutely thrilled to have two award-winning composers and conductors all of the way from the United States of America. And they're here for a very special day of masterclasses with IMRO, who are the music organisation that collect money basically on behalf of songwriters and publishers. Eamma Noon is an award-winning Irish composer and conductor who splits her time between composing for video games, feature films, TV commercials and conducting classical and game music concerts. Arguably the world's current premier conductor of video game scores, she composed and conducted for the iconic and award-winning video game World of Warcraft, among her many, many other credits. As a composer, she has led many of the world's great ensembles, such as the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Royal Philharmonic in London, the Sydney Symphony, and the National Symphonies of Spain, Ireland, Poland, and Qatar, just to name a few. Craig Stewart Garfinkel is an Emmy-nominated and award-winning music producer and composer. His career includes work on feature films, trailers, documentaries, multimedia, television commercials, stage CDs, and video games. His music has appeared in hundreds of other film and television projects, such as NBC's The Office, Lost, The Sopranos, and America's Got Talent. His iconic film trailers include J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, Sin City, the last three Harry Potter films, and Vicky Cristina Barcelona. What incredible CVs. Eamma and Craig, you're very welcome to Near FM.
Nice to be here. Thank you, Nora.
It's great to be here.
And so, Eamma, you're a Galway girl. You're from Ireland. I mean, you started out in classical music. Tell us about how that started you out.
Yeah, I pretty much have the very traditional classical, Irish classical education. And I come from a very small village in the west of Ireland called Kilconnell, East Galway. Very proud East Galway woman. And, you know, basically, as a kid, I was so excited by music. Anything that was going on, I had to be a part of it. I didn't care what style it was. I didn't care what the genre was. I just wanted to be involved. Now, in saying that, the first time I ever heard an orchestra and on TV, I was just obsessed with it. And I was surrounded by trad music in the village I'm from. There's a very famous composer of traditional Irish music called Paddy Fahey. He's an original voice in trad music, but it really wasn't my thing at the time. I mean, I've come to appreciate it so much more over the years, but I was just mad about this musical machine called the orchestra. So I was just out to do anything I could to be involved with it. First time I heard Mozart's Requiem, I just thought, if something this beautiful exists, I have to be a part of it. And one of the things that drew me to music for media is the emotionality, the emotional quality, and being able to reach people on an emotional level through music.
And I guess in some ways in Ireland, growing up playing instruments, that's very much part and parcel of life, even before you get to the kind of the level of playing that you're at, Eamma. Was it for you, Craig, was it like that growing? Where did you grow up in the States, and did you have that kind of musicality around you?
I got very, very lucky in terms of I grew up on the North Shore of Chicago, and by the time I got to high school at about age, 14, I already knew what I wanted to do with my life, which was I wanted to write orchestral music for films, and I already had established myself as a jazz guitar player because I started so young. And I got lucky in that the high school that I went to, which had 5,000 students in it, a place called New Trier, had a full symphony orchestra and three jazz ensembles. And since I wasn't as academically inclined as I was musically inclined, I filled up as much time as I could playing in all the orchestras, and I ended up teaching one of the jazz ensembles and played guitar in the jazz ensemble. So I came through a very, very strict jazz program and was playing bass in the orchestra and writing for all of these ensembles at the same time, starting at age, 14. And then, by the time I was 16 and 17, I was writing full-length musicals for the high school, the little ensemble, little orchestra. And that just kind of never stopped.
And is that the path to success, Eamma? Is it about putting in the hours, putting in more hours? Does it take perfectionism?
Yeah. The other thing is you need to be a bit of a mad obsessive. I mean, everyone that I seem to work with was that you know, kid that was completely obsessed with what they're doing. Not just a music nerd, but like a some kind of thing let out, you know.
And yeah.
I was definitely, I would say I would hate to have had to teach me, you know. but there's the honing the skills definitely. And the other thing is things ebb and flow as well. Sometimes you do need to put in all of those hours, but you have to be careful that it never becomes stale for you. And you'll feel it coming on where music is the life and the love is being sapped out of it for whatever reason. It could be because you've had too many crazy deadlines in a row, or you've not had one of those magical experiences in a while. And I'm always careful of that, because we really, really do need to keep our inner 8-year-old bopping up and down with excitement about music, because that comes through to the audience. It comes through in a composition. And keeping that mad kid from school who, I mean, I was doing all kinds of things. I was staying up all night writing music for a competition with the Irish Chamber Choir, not handing in my music homework for class. You know, I was just total mad renegade. But the obsession and love and delight and pure wonder that was there as a child, I'm always working on keeping that alive. And I see it in my favorite colleagues as well.
And what about you, Craig?
I wanted to elaborate on one other thing that you were talking about. One of the great songwriters of all time is a gentleman by the name of Jack Siegel. He wrote When Sunny Gets Blue, When Joanna Loved Me, Here's to the Losers, a lot of the catalog for Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald, and you know, from that era.
The greats.
Yeah, the greats. I had a distinct pleasure very young in my career to catch kind of the end of his. And so for the last like 10 years of his life, I was producing his music. And got to work with some of the great old songwriters of all time and kind of learn at their feet, which was just a priceless experience. What Jack would tell you if he was sitting here, he said, you know, I lost track around 3,000, 4,000 songs over the course of my life. Out of all of those songs, he would say 3 of them are perfect. 1 is almost perfect, needs a little bit of work. I'd rewrite the rest of them. And that was When Joanna Loved Me, which was a hit by Tony Bennett, but you know, When Sunny Gets Blue, More Love, which was a hit with Al Jarreau, and then Here's to the Losers, which was a big hit with Frank Sinatra. Those are the 4. Here's to the Losers is the one that needs just a little bit of work.
And are you guys like that? Do you have that kind of perfectionism? Is there just a line where you say, have to stop now?
Oh, yeah.
You take that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Virgo.
You're the control freak.
Oh, it's rotten. I mean, it really helps on the conducting side of things, but it's just awful. I mean, never to be satisfied with anything. And Craig always says, art is never finished, merely abandoned. Who are you paraphrasing when you... Do you remember who?
I don't know. I'd like to think I made it up, but I bet you if we Googled
it's either
it...
Craig or Socrates, one of the two.
One of the two.
But yeah, it's that's one of the hard things about the arts. And I think we're all a bit mad when it comes to this stuff. And me, possibly a little bit more than most. Which is just, you know, that a little bit of dissatisfaction is a good thing. It pushes us and it makes us push towards being better and push towards different solutions to things. But yeah, I still listen to things years and years later and go, oh God, the horns are just like, you know, just that one bar, there's a tiny bit too sharp. And it will never leave me. I'll always hear it that way. You know, it's just...
Be like your final words. You're like, if only I could go back and change the horn.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. It's there's always something. And Craig will say, or somebody else will say to me, you're insane. There is nothing there.
But even if there is, I try to figure out how to understand that there is a level of perfection that you can try to get to, mm-hmm. but that it is... basically unobtainable, kind of.
If you look at when they make Persian rugs and they're these exquisite kind of woven carpets, but out of respect to God, they always deliberately make an error to show that actually out of humility that...
Yeah, humans can't be perfect, only God is perfect.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, oh, I love that. I'm going to remember that now. The sad thing, and this is where perfection goes wrong or the pursuit of... I mean, incredible composer Derufle wrote a stunning Requiem, but he constantly wrote and rewrote and rewrote and was constantly striving for perfection. So we don't have as much music from him as we could have. And his music, his work was absolutely startling in its beauty. But I'd like to have more of it.
Can you talk about as well, because, you know, we've mentioned that your work crosses TV and film and video games. Are you trying to do something different for the audience when you approach a video game or a film? What's your approach when you're coming to a project?
There's one of the things I love about writing for video games when you're doing what we call in-game music. Of course, you have the cinematics or the cutscenes, which are basically little movies. And you score those exactly the same way you do a movie. You know, every frame has to be timed out. What I love about doing the in-game music is you may get an inspiration package where you know what the scene looks like, so you know what the world looks like, you know elements of the of what's there, but because the players are playing, you can't really time anything out. You have to let the music basically evolve as its own, and you try to make it in such a way that it evolves on its own and makes sense on its own. And when you deliver that music, you deliver basically what we call the hero version, which is the version that includes everything. And then you deliver all the elements separated out so that when the player is actually playing the game, if they play a certain world for an hour, let's say, they may only hear, probably will only hear that hero version once. And the rest of the time, they will hear different iterations of it based on all the different elements that are put together. And it's the brilliant programmers and the game engine that actually determines those. So in that regard, that part of it is really fun for me. I'll let Emer address her own, but for me, that's kind of fun because you don't have to hit a certain spot at a certain moment.
And it's a different process, I understand. There's a lot more to and fro much earlier in the creative process.
Yeah, it depends on, I mean, both video games and film, they have different usages for music. An example would be a character in a scene has the radio on in the background. Usually a song has been licensed by the music supervisor, or sometimes in video games it's actually original work that's been written. It's another quirky little Easter egg, as they call them, in the video game. But what I always like to share is that composers have always, through music history, collaborated with different media, and we simply adjust to deal with the needs of what is the music for and really get inside of that. And I believe any sensitive artist, any sensitive composer can really do that, whether it's a video game or a film. You know, some people are called video game composers, some people are called film composers. I object to those labels because everyone I know crosses over both. It's just, what is the music for and what do I need to do? What are my parameters? What are my limitations? I will say one of the things about video game in-game music is we don't have to worry about dialogue, which in film is a big deal. And things like in film foreshadowing it right in the moment, we need to be careful with the music that we don't foreshadow something that's about to happen, or that we do, depending on what the director wants. And Craig gives this brilliant lecture on point of view, which I'm sure you're going to give to all of the IMRO members when we do the masterclasses. Whose point of view is the music coming from? Is it the omniscient, where it's you know something that the characters in the scene don't know? Is it coming from a character in the scene, their point of view? Or is it a character that's in the film but isn't even present in the scene at that moment? And how do you play that point of view?
The masterclasses they're the whole day. You guys are going to be doing 3 hours each. So there's a morning session and an afternoon session. And it is, I think, to some extent for professional musicians, it's going to be pretty in depth.
It will be. But even for, you know, someone who's just very interested in the whole process and just wants to learn more, I would recommend everybody to come down.
I'm a filmmaker, but I've made one film, so I'm kind of coming just to go, I don't know how they do it, but I'm fascinated to see how creative people put their craft together. I think it's fascinating.
Well, part of my lecture will exactly be you've been hired to compose for this film, and how do you best communicate and understand your position? I only half laughingly say I call it beating the capital C out of composer. Because understanding your position as a composer in a film, what I say, it's kind of like somebody spent the last 2 years building a house.
Yeah.
And then we're going to come in and paint it. and determine what color the house is going to be and what color all the rooms are going to be. Well, that's a huge job, and unless you really understand all the motivations of what went into building that house, you're either going to have somebody who really wants chartreuse walls or maybe not, and you don't want to make the wrong color. You don't want to make the wrong choices. So that's also part of what I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to be doing more of what I call basically dumping my head open and saying a little bit of everything that I know, going from all the different elements, you know, from production to how to communicate to how do you make a living at it, music rights. I'm going to be talking very fast, so bring notes. And then Emer is going to focus on her specialty, and she's going to be doing a 3-hour conducting seminar, and we're going to pick out of a hat just a handful of people who are actually going to try to implement some of what they've just learned with a couple of keyboardists playing along and following.
And I read that when you said that you wanted to be a conductor, that was something that you weren't encouraged to do at the beginning.
Oh, I was flat out told at 19 years of age that because I'm young, Irish and female, that I didn't have a chance at a career. And this is somebody who'd never heard my work or seen my work. But it was a professional conductor I'd grown up watching on TV, you know, and it was, I mean, as an educator, Craig and I have both taught for UCLA Extension for many years and Columbia College Chicago. I cannot imagine even thinking those thoughts, let alone saying them to a young artist. But I am open about that, because for any artist out there that has had some ridiculous things said to them, I just say, you know, Socrates said, know thyself, and nobody else knows you the way you know yourself. Nobody else has the right to tell you what you're made of and where you can take that stuff, that good stuff that you're made of. But it's something that I was very driven to do. I just wanted to be stuck in the middle of the music, and in every which way. I felt like being a composer would make me a better conductor. Being an orchestrator would make me a better composer. Being a conductor would make me a better composer. Being a conductor would make me... That it was, for me, it was the 360 kind of thing. And I wanted to be the modern day, as we used to call it in classical music and in Baroque music. Well, Baroque music in particular, a Kapellmeister, which was the chapel master who played the organ, conducted the choir, wrote the music for all the feast days, copied out all the parts, put the orchestra together, conducted everybody, dealt with the prior or the reverend or the pope or the king or whoever it was. I just see what we do today as the 21st century equivalent. And for me, I have to have all those things going. I have to be able to orchestrate my own music. This career of orchestrator seems to have become a separate thing from composer, for two reasons. One being, sometimes the deadlines are just too excruciating, you need all hands on deck. And the other being, just there's a lot of composers that don't come from the orchestral world. So for me, I needed to study and have everything. But Craig comes from, I come from the absolute classical, like absolute vodka, absolute classical, and Craig.
And we've got absolute jazz over,
yeah,
in this corner.
Well, I'm totally jealous of him, though, because he studied with David Baker and then went on to study with one of the Hollywood golden era greats, which is David Raxon. And Raxon, his first real gig was on Modern Times with Charlie Chaplin, and allegedly, we don't know, but probably co-wrote Smile, that song, Smile Though Your Heart Is Aching, that song. I'm so jealous of that. And now I've started in my dotage studying extended jazz harmony because I want to catch up.
You're in your salad days.
Yeah, really.
So, and do you think, Craig, do you bring a different approach, you know, having the jazz brain as opposed to sort of the classical training? Do you think it gives a different approach to things?
I think the jazz background definitely does. I mean, I will say I do have, I mean, one of my degrees is in classical guitar and the other one is in classical composition. What I will say about that is, for anyone who is studying music, understanding functional harmony from a jazz point of view can only help, in that jazz is often, you know, the art of spontaneous composition, basically, and understanding how functional harmony works against a melody is the key to how you perform a jazz line against a functional harmony. And so you know, I used to get into trouble because I was analyzing Stravinsky in a class, and I basically looked at it and saw everything as jazz chords.
But it is, in
but
a way.
But it is.
Yeah.
It's there.
And Debussy, you hear Debussy as jazz.
Yeah, I can, like, sit there and write all the guitar chords out over the Debussy because that's the way I hear it. I hear it in both a linear and a vertical structure, which is something. But, you know, Emer's, your music is just as complex, but and harmonically complex. It's just, it's part of what makes each of us individuals.
Yeah, and you were telling me on the way in as well about a trad project that you're involved in. And just actually it reminded me of it there with, in terms of trad being like other types of music. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that project and how you ended up doing it?
I resent this as cultural misappropriation on Craig's part. He's suddenly producing all these trad albums.
Well, one of the things that I noticed about trad music is trad is very much jazz modal harmony. You know, it's all the modes, it's all improvisation. It has a lot of the same, you know, the same functions, understanding that this is the harmonic structure, these are the notes that you play over it, and the melodies are drawn out of that. And I've seemed to have fallen into it. Emer and I created the Dublin International Video Game Music Festival. We did it for 3 years. And as part of that, we ended up having a concert of traditional Irish musicians playing themes from the great video games, which triggered a Kickstarter, which triggered an album of music from The Legend of Zelda being performed by traditional Irish musicians.
Okay.
And so, you know, it took about almost 2 years to finish that one, but we love it. It's called The Celtic Link. That's on Amazon and
for Zelda fans.
For Zelda fans.
The main character in the video game is Link. It's like the cheesiest name you can possibly come up with. But
you can get it on Amazon and on iTunes.
There you go. What was great about that is that we just had this mad idea a couple of weeks before the festival. I'd been on tour for a couple of years with sort of symphonic orchestrations of the music from The Legend of Zelda, because Nintendo had announced the 25th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda and had brought me on to be the face of that and tour this brilliant music. So I always thought this Japanese composer, Koji Kondo, I was like, some of this sounds like trad. So right before the festival, we had this mad idea. Since this is in Dublin, we need to have an Irish flavor. And we went to DIT, Conservatory of Music and Drama. I went to Trinity College for a music degree, but I spent 8 years at the College of Music, which I absolutely loved. And they said, well, listen, we'll throw a couple of tunes together. But they showed up with this hour of material, and the album was created at the behest of the audience. We had so many people in that room come up to us and say, oh my God, please, 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 you have to record this. So we did a Kickstarter campaign. It was so much more popular than we had our wildest dreams. We recorded the album. It went really, really well. And it's this unique little mad thing that wouldn't exist unless you'd been in that spot in the universe at that particular time. And all of a sudden, Craig's producing trad albums for BMG with the same gang, of course.
And performing, I believe, as well.
Oh, I'm playing on the album as well, yeah. Guitar and bass. And then
a little kind of cameo.
Yeah.
So just going back as well to the masterclass, because I know you're going to be talking a lot about the game side of what you guys do. I was quite shocked when I saw, you know, the prize money that is involved, like, across the world in, like, people playing kind of video games. You know, when you think of the film industry, and music can be one of the very expensive parts of making a film. Mm-hmm. So I guess what's so great about the game side of things is the cash is there to put into the orchestras and to put into the musicians, but also this is a huge burgeoning industry as well. I think, Emer, you've been saying that, you know, Ireland could really be leading the way on this as well.
You're going to get me on the soapbox now, but I'll keep going until somebody listens. Yeah, I mean, I've had the great pleasure of recording for Blizzard Entertainment for many, many years, and we go up to Skywalker Ranch and there's 90-100 piece orchestra, there's same huge choir, and basically any other instrument that we can think of, including, like, I wrote for shofar on one piece, which is actually a ram's horn, but anything we want. And it's brilliant to have that, because then you can push the creativity and so on. So in terms of Ireland and the video game industry, there's some brilliant stalwarts in Ireland who are making their presence known, who are working really hard, harder than they should. But this is an industry that brings together some of our greatest strengths here, and that's technology and the arts. I mean, the other thing is keeping people in film and video games employed. I mean, there's a lot of crossover. Film is using what we call pre-viz a lot now, which basically is directors setting up using the same technology that video games use to set up scenes in advance. So the huge skill crossover, music, of course, acting, directors, producers. I mean, in terms of competing with manufacturing, I've toured China. I've performed in more than 20 cities in China. You know, you're in Guangzhou and you're going, how could Ireland ever compete with this? And would we want to? Because, you know, it's a different political situation. It's a different rules around the workplace. But where we can really compete is our intellectual and creative capital.
Yeah, and you kind of think that maybe some of the bedrock for that is here now when you look at the sort of Coda Dojo kind of community across Ireland.
Guys, yeah.
And there's a lot of young entrepreneur programs. Yeah. For the first time, really, the film industry as well has really started to bed down with, like, the building of a new studio in Limerick, and
it's fabulous,
Brown Bag Films are now getting their first merchandising deal.
Well, it's as I said, there's a huge skill set crossover. There's a different business structure, however, and I think actually the video game business structure, it's much more like a corporate structure. It'd be much more familiar in certain areas. It's be much more familiar type of business structure for people like the IDA to get involved in. But there's great things happening in Coda Dojo. I so love what they're doing, and there's a new technology university and all this. It's great. But the video game companies that are out there right now need funding. There's no point in us educating brilliant Irish people to work in an industry that doesn't exist, so everyone has to leave. But we're getting more mature about how we see arts and entertainment in terms of as a real career, as a business. I swear I am still asked, do you get paid for that? You know, I'm like, yes, that is how we make a living and raise our family and everything. And I think as a country, we're getting to the place where we are seeing arts and entertainment as a viable industry, business. And Brown Bag, oh my God, what they've achieved. They have 700 employees. They're the largest independent media, if not one of the largest independent companies, period, in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, they've achieved is stunning.
And we should say, because you just mentioned family there, we haven't said up to now that you guys, so really the question should be for two people obsessed with music that 23 and a half hours of each living day they want to do music, what you should do. And the answer is marry somebody else like that. So you guys are married and you have children and you live together in Malibu.
Yes.
People might have figured that out by now. We're just spelling out in case they don't know.
Yeah, and we were just talking about this before we started, that on August 16th, it'll be our 10th anniversary.
Ah, so you guys are like, you're going around the world. I know you come back to Ireland a lot.
We're all over the place. We call ourselves a circus family. We took our son on a 5-week tour of China, 14 cities, 5 weeks, and he had his third birthday on the stage in Changsha, China. But, you know, we have one foot in Ireland and one in Los Angeles. And, you know, you can take the girl out of Ireland. But you know how it is. It's just, and the level of creativity here at home is just fabulous.
As I've always said, you know, the Ireland is a country of raconteurs and storytellers. And who better to tell those stories in game, video, what have you? That's something that is unique and needs to be really fostered in that regard.
Also, if you kind of do a bit of like future gazing, driverless cars are going to be mainstream in like 2036. The robots are coming. They're taking at least half of the people's jobs. But all these kinds of jobs, these creative jobs, they're jobs that, well, actually, I did once listen to a Christmas carol written by a robot. So
oh,
was it any good?
The robot, it was really, really weird. It was like if a person had written it, you'd be really worried about them. So I think robots could do your jobs, but maybe they couldn't do it in the same way. And, you know, so those people with creative capital, those are always going to be
sought
after.
Interestingly enough, Jack Ma, the head of Alibaba, which I always describe Alibaba in China, is Alibaba could eat Amazon, PayPal and eBay for breakfast and not put on any weight. So Jack Ma, the head of that company, is encouraging China to change the education system so that it's all about creativity, because his thing is the robots are coming. Let's not educate our children to compete with robots. Let's educate them to compete with things that robots cannot do. And interestingly enough, he's been pushing everybody towards the creative industries.
And he also, in creative industries is not just though being creative as an art, but also the creativity that comes along with calculus, that comes along with engineering, that comes along with thinking outside of the box in order to invent things that are better, or even better robots. You know, those elements that you can't foresee being optimized in a way that a computer or a robot can do it, you know? Thinking about how, I think it was Newton, what's it? I think it was, invented calculus to be able to describe what he was showing and predict how the heavens moved. And so he invented an entirely new new type of math in order to be able to make sense of what he was observing. That's not the kind of a thing a computer can ever do.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is an incredibly exciting future, as long as all the people at the top of the tree don't get like too frightened and go, what's going to happen when they all rise up because they've got no jobs, and like start trying to build a world that doesn't allow for that, which is, you know, you read about people in Silicon Valley actually buying and building bunkers in places like Ireland, like New Zealand, because in case the whole world riots, they can like go to there.
Yeah, there's and a little like, bit of crazy.
Actually, they're watching too much Netflix. That's what's happening.
But people are doing that. But actually, your guy, that's the way forward. It's like, build the world that allows for the fact that people are going to have leisure time and whatever else, you know, actually build that world, then rather than worrying about the downsides of it, redesign it, and we can all do incredibly fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good way of looking at it. Yeah.
So you're not going to be talking about robots on August 4th, but you might.
We'll be talking about holograms, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about to embark on a project, a live project, live orchestra. I can't announce who it is yet, but a famous hologram. So that actually uses very special synchronization techniques. I'm going to be talking about how to synchronize the orchestra to, it was going to be film to picture, but it's actually going to be picture and holograms now. I mean, it's a brave new world.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm a bit shocked myself.
Well, I think last year was the first year that VR was a category at the Cannes Film Festival, which is, you know, one of the oldest and most traditional festivals. So things are changing.
Well, look at, I mean, take creative people, I'll always interpret some new shiny object in a way that nobody imagined. And that's how I see VR going. It's just another vehicle for brilliant creative brains to go and do something extraordinary with. But yeah, you're right. I think you're right about Cannes. But we're seeing, you know, being able to compose in 3D and Craig's going to be talking a bit about mixing in three dimensions and things like that, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm absolutely going to be doing that.
So synchronization is one of the things I'm going to be dealing with, because I come from the old school classical conducting. But for me, every bit of mad new fangled technology that's been used on the stage, I want to have a go at it while it's still new. I mean, I've done things like used Kinex boxes to manipulate visuals in real time behind the orchestra. And I remember having my score knocked off the music stand by a camera drone there a couple of years ago. The first time they were ever being used. And I was like, there wasn't a class for this in music college. But there's all kinds of fun things happening, and it's how creative people apply them. And what interested me in this project with the hologram was, okay, the technology to begin with. But I thought, if this is just technology for the sake of it, that's not. I want to see who's the creative mind behind this and what they're doing with the technology. It's not just, ooh, ah, look at that new shiny object. And I was satisfied that it was a really beautiful poetic use of the technology.
And so Craig, in terms of your masterclass as well, I know that you have written music for 30 films, I think it is, which cover drama, comedy, thrillers. So you said you're going to be talking a little bit about the film side of your work in that masterclass.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be doing that and talking about how to best interpret what you're being told into music, because our job is to do that. It's one thing to sit down and watch a picture and say, oh, yes, I know exactly how this should be scored. It's another thing to sit down, look at a picture, and have somebody else tell you and understand that, no, your job is not just to do it the way you think it is, but also how, you know, the director and the producers and all those people think it is and think it should go. So I will be doing a lot of all of this.
And can I ask you, do you have a favorite film of all time that you would, for the soundtrack?
Oh my goodness.
Or is that too difficult a question?
Yes, you do.
The Bad and the Beautiful, my late mentor, David Raxon. David's career spanned decades. He taught at UCLA and USC for about 50 years by the time he was done, and is probably one of the most influential educators, in addition to being one of the most brilliant, brilliant composers ever to work in film and TV. And he never achieved the kind of fame that John Williams or some of the other composers have, but he is no less the composer.
The work is undeniable.
Undeniably
really stunning.
Stunning. Yeah, especially The Bad and the Beautiful and Forever Amber and Laura. Those are my three favorites of his.
Great. Well, listen, guys, thank you so, so much for coming in to share some of your process and inspirations today. And of course, if anyone wants to go along to the masterclasses with Craig Stewart Garfinkel and Eamon Noon, those are on August the 4th. And you can get all of the information at www.imro.ie. Guys, you'll have to come back next time you're in town. Thank you so very much.
Our pleasure. Can I just give a shout out to Keith Johnson and his team, because we keep coming back to IMRO because we love them, and we love our Irish IMRO friends and colleagues. So thanks to Keith and the gang for having us, and we're delighted always to be a part of their family.
So guys, I'm going to have to let you go now, because I know that you're going for some gluten-free fish and chips.
Oh, I'm a celiac on the dance floor and they have fish and chips at Beshoff's in Malahide, and I'm thrilled.